that is over for Dolly now. Dolly is over now.
Ooh. Love in a Marlow Town by Deborah Pemberty. Welcome to the Qumran Report. May the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. My name is Melvin Ishmael Johnson, coming at you live from Skid Row Studios. And I'm in the studio with my co-host, Earlene Anthony. Now, you can listen to us live or download our show and any past show by Googling in Qumran Report. Our call-in number is 800-893-9562. You can call in if you want to ask a question or just chat with me or some of the guests. Call 800-893-9562. Welcome to the Qumran Report. Now, this week on the Qumran Report, we will talk about some community happenings, starting off with Deborah Pemberty talking about the Half the Sky Project. And some interviews about Feed the Homeless, Feed the Soul. I have Claudia and Tanaya, I'll get that right, in the studio with us. And we're also going to do some interviews with Robert Clemens, Dwayne Perry, and Willis Boyd and Shantae Duncan talking about the Paul Robeson Puppet Show and the Paul Robeson Festival coming up this weekend. Now, Deborah, can you tell our listening audience just a little about the Half the Sky Project?
Yeah, well, Half the Sky is an international movement that is sparked by the book by Nicholas Kristof and his writing partner that is about how all the things that are happening to women and girls all around the world, sex trafficking, sex selective abortions, like in China where it's state policy that girl children are aborted, that sort of thing. And the movement is to stop the things that are happening and to support all of the great things that are happening to change it, like people who are liberating brothels, people who are educating young girls and women about infant mortality and how to take care of mother and baby and that sort of thing. So it's an international movement, and it's a thing that I'm very passionate about. I've been involved as a peace activist all my life. Mm-hmm. And so I wrote a song that I mean to be a theme song for the movement. It's not officially attached to it, mm-hmm. but I've written it. It's called Half the Sky, mm-hmm. and now I have the Half the Sky Song Project. So I go around mainly to houses of worship, and I sing the song, which is to generate energy for the movement and to educate people about the movement. And then the pastor gives a call to action, asks people to sign petitions, mm-hmm. To sign recent legislation, and to find out about the movement, that sort of thing.
Okay.
So it's really to just, it's kind of like a We Are the World type of thing, to mm-hmm. use music to make positive change.
Okay, yeah. And we're going to play that song in just a minute, but you said something. Can you say that again about, did I get that correctly? You say that the girls born in China... aborted?
Well, there are places where it is considered, it's basically very common to abort girl children because mm-hmm. the population has to stay down. And like in China, there's the one child policy. Mm-hmm. And so mm-hmm. a lot of people do not want to have a girl child. Mm-hmm. So I guess it's actually it's an overstatement to say the state policy to abort the girl children. But mm-hmm. it is, most people want a boy. And so there's a huge imbalance in the population now because so many people have aborted their girl children, that mm-hmm. there are many, many men that cannot marry someone because there just aren't enough women around. Mm-hmm. And that's only part of the issue. But the other issue is just the valuing of women. I mean, the fact that you would abort a child based on its sex because you didn't want it mm-hmm. is really tragic. Mm-hmm. And so this movement is to say no more. These things can't just be acceptable. And in this country, too, Los Angeles is one of the capitals for human trafficking.
One of the amazing thing about that is... in the pre-Islamic society, you know, that was a common thing because they looked upon the male as a breadwinner, they were the mm-hmm. warriors and all that kind of stuff like that. So all the way up until the coming of Islam, it was a regular practice to bury the females.
Mm.
And when a female was born, they would really look down on that changed with the coming of Islam.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's just amazing that when you said that about China, that's the thing that came to mm-hmm. my mind. Before Before we play the song, I want to ask you another question. Why do you think there's so much oppression of women all over the world?
Well, that's a really good question. I mean, it's become institutionalized. It's become accepted. There's a view of power around the world. The power is to dominate rather than the power to take care of. Mm-hmm. You know, if you look back to the goddess religions, power was viewed as the power to take care of the people in the village. But there's become this might makes right sort of idea around the world that if you have the might of the sword, you have the might of that sort of power, then you're right. And so, I guess, you know, one reason is just that people haven't really stood up and said, hey, this is not acceptable. And that's really what this book is about is, I mean, there's people in the West who say, oh, we shouldn't impose our values on the East. But at a certain point, you know, we imposed values all around the world or people did saying slavery is not right. In the 19th century, that was the big cause.
Okay.
We didn't completely end it, but, you know.
Okay. Yeah. When we get to our community roundtable, I probably want to open it up and get some more feedback since we got some more women's in the studio to get their take on it. But look, let's hear the song Half the Sky, and we'll come back and talk about that for a while.
Cool.
The sky we hold up, half the sky in wonder, but half the sky is bleeding, fading from sight. Well, I see the sky, I see the sky is changing. We are gathering our sisters, changing rage into might. And you can call me stuck in waves.
Half the Sky, beautiful song, Deborah Penberthy. Can you tell us about the event that you got coming up this coming Thursday, right?
Yeah, I'd love to. This Thursday, I'm having a celebration fundraiser for my upcoming CD. I've been writing music since the 90s, but I've never made a CD and kind of invested in my music in that way. So I'm doing that now. It's a rather expensive project, and so I'm doing a variety show to raise money for it, and it's at Throop Unitarian Church in Pasadena. I know that you held this up to the camera before. I don't know if this is going to show that well. It's at Troop Unitarian in Pasadena at 300 South Los Robles Avenue, and it's from 8 to 11 on Thursday, and there's going to be several different bands, Nona Music, which is San Keeble's band. There's going to be Robert Amberson is a great guitarist in town. There's going to be a sketch comedy troupe called They Said This Would Be Easy. And there's going to be a storyteller named Ty Fance and a little girl singing a song about hope. She's 8 years old. And it's just going to be a really great time. I'm going to be the last band, and it goes from about 8 till 10:30, and it's a suggested donation of $10. Mm-hmm. And if people give 15 or more, they'll be guaranteed to get the CD as either a download or a physical copy once the CD comes out. Mm-hmm. So I hope people can make it out. If you want to know more about it, you can look for me, Deborah Penberthy, on SoundCloud, and that's D-E-B-R-A, so the short form of Deborah. And then Penberthy, so it's pen, like a pen that you write with, P-E-N. And then B as in boy, E-R-T-H-Y. And you can just put that into SoundCloud, and you'll find my SoundCloud page and a couple of early demos.
Okay. Okay, Deborah, we're going to come back to you for the latter part of the show for our closing comments and also to do another beautiful live song.
Thank you so much.
In the studio. Okay, I'm delighted to have in the studio Claudia Perez and Tanaya Nicole, did I get that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're from excellent. Can you talk about the Feed the Homeless project? What is that about?
Well, we're LA on Cloud 9, the Feed the Homeless project. This is what we do monthly, twice a month. Twice a month, we do it at MacArthur Park and Martin Luther King Park.
Okay.
It's a group of us that get together, bring food, clothes, shoes, anything that could give to the community.
MacArthur Park, is that on the Sunday?
Yes. Okay. The fourth Sunday is actually on the flyer. Martin Luther King is the third Sunday, and MacArthur Park is the fourth Sunday.
Okay, because I think I see you guys up there, because I stay one block from, I stay the block up on Coronado.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right up there on Parkview, right?
We actually feed about 150 to 200 people.
Just now, do you come down to Skid Row, too?
Yes, we do.
Okay, when do you come to Skid Row?
Yeah. You know, we randomly do it during the week. Depends how much. Sometimes I do it on my own, or I come with a group. We have Teen Project every single Friday that we bring a group of teens to Skid Row and hand out bags of for the animals as well.
Now, tell us a little about the organization, LA on Clouds.
Well, we started in October.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. We started in October. I started on my own, then with another friend, and then more people started just growing and growing. Now we became a nonprofit organization. We are a 501c3, and we also feed the animals as well.
Wow. Any particular reason that you started this project?
My own struggles in the past, being homeless, knowing how it is to be homeless and receiving help, and you know, I have a short statement on that just because of what I've been through as well.
What are your thoughts on what we were talking about earlier, the oppression of women?
Yeah, activists, huh? Yeah.
I like your work. That's really awesome what you're doing.
It's you know, I guess we could relate, but yours is a little bit more stronger than that, and I would like to get more information on that.
Cool. Mm-hmm. We can work together.
Yeah, of course. It's hard in here.
You think that fits in with domestic violence and all that kind of stuff when we're talking about oppression?
Yeah, there's a lot of that in the streets, domestic violence. That actually, I witness it a lot.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Just when people are walking along, just people that you reach out to?
Yeah.
Do you think the economics have a lot to do with the struggle, you know, a lot of families and stuff?
The struggles lead you to drug use, and a lot of the drug use, of course, you become more homeless because your money goes to other stuff. So, I mean, there's a lot behind that. I can't really speak for anybody else. I speak for myself, my own struggles, and what I've been through in the past that led me to be homeless. And fortunately, I'm back on my feet now, and, you know, I think it was my kids that was a reality for me.
Okay. Now, Tanaya, how did you get involved? Can you tell us a little about your involvement?
I started feeding the homeless with a separate group. They feed Monday through Friday and just give peanut butter and jelly and whatever else. And then that's how I met Claudia. And one of the things that touched me was that she made sure the animals were fed. Because mm-hmm. sometimes even if the people aren't hungry or the people, you know, are on drugs or whatever it is, the animals are usually tied up to them somehow and they can't go and fend for themselves. Mm-hmm. So I actually started getting more donations of dog food sometimes than like people, because I'm like the poor animals too, because there's always, you know, she always makes sure the people are fed, but then you feel more sorry sometimes for the animals because they can't, you know. Mm-hmm.
She's more of an animal activist. Mm-hmm. I love it.
They'll get their own.
Now, how about when you know, one of the things I see in the downtown area all the time where I work at, I always see, especially now with the gentrification downtown, I see so many animals that live in homes, you know, all different kind of dogs and stuff. And I see so many people laying in the streets, you know. What do you think about that paradox, the fact that animals, you know, got people, human beings living in streets and these same human beings walking around with animals, they can take them into their house with no compassion for the person that's laying in the street.
You know? Well, I think from different conversations with people that are just strictly animal activists and not humanitarians is that humans can speak for themselves and do for themselves, and not the animals are voiceless.
Mm-hmm.
And they feel that we are their voice.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll rather reach out to help the animals than the people.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in both. You know, I can't just ignore the humans and just, you know, focus on the animals. I've been actually on Skid Row a lot lately, helping the people there to get their animals fixed.
Mm-hmm.
Spay, neuter, vaccines, microchips, all that. Mm-hmm. Registration. I've been focusing a lot on that.
Okay.
So the population of, you know, mm-hmm. so the breeding could stop and mm-hmm. less homeless animals in mm-hmm. Skid Row.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now we're going to come back and discuss a lot of that in our closing comments in our community roundtable. Now, another community happening this weekend is the first Paul Robeson Festival at the Los Angeles Theater Center, Friday, July the 18th, 2014, and Saturday, July the 19th, 2014. Before we talk about the festival in detail, my co-host, Earlene Anthony, will read something about Paul Robeson.
Paul Leroy Robeson, April 9th, 1898 to January 23rd, 1976, was an African-American singer and actor who became involved with the civil rights movement. At Rutgers University, he was an outstanding football player, then had an international career in singing as well as acting in theater and movies. He became politically involved in response to the Spanish Civil War, fascism, and social injustices. His advocacy of anti-imperialism, affiliation with communism, and criticism of the United States government caused him to be blacklisted during the McCarthy era. Ill health forced him into retirement from his career. He remained until his death an advocate of the political stance he took. Robeson won an academic scholarship to Rutgers University, where he became a football All-American in the class valedictorian. He received his LLB from Columbia Law School while playing in the National Football League, the NFL. At Columbia, he sang and acted in off-campus productions, and after graduating, he became a participant in the Harlem Renaissance with performances in The Empress Jones and All God's Children's Got Wings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, now Paul Robeson, very, very important person. I always say Paul Robeson was Dr. King before Dr. King in terms of the following that he had that crossed all of the racial lines like this. Now, what I would like to do is I would like to play an interview with one of the directors at the Paul Robeson Festival, Robert Clemens.
It's I'm helping Ishmael Johnson, broadcasting live from Skid Row Studio.
Live.
I'm at the beautiful Ford Theater at the Edison Plaza, and I'm talking to Robert Clemens. He's one of the actors that will be doing the readings tonight. What part are you playing, Robert?
I'm playing Undersecretary of the Air Force, Rodney Coleman.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little about what you know about Rodney Coleman?
I know absolutely nothing about Rodney Coleman. I just know that he's trying to take care of a mess, or trying to straighten out some things that happened in the past, and he's mm-hmm. the head of the commission that was duly advocated to put some rights to some wrongs mm-hmm. from the past, and he's commissioned by the President of the United States back mm-hmm. in 1995.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little about your home, where you're from, and how you got off into acting?
I'm originally from Hartford, Connecticut, insurance capital of the world. I don't know how that happened to come to be that, but we have all the main insurance company, Travelers, Aetna, Cigna, all those type of insurance companies are housed in Hartford, Connecticut. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't an actor at first. After college, I worked for IBM Corporation for 10 years before I found out that that was not for me, that I needed to express myself. And after my father, who had worked like 40 years straight for a aircraft building company, manufacturing company, Pratt & Whitney, and he died at 61 of a heart attack, that I wasn't going out like that. If I was going to work for a company that long, I surely didn't want to end up like that. So I resigned from IBM Corp and went about going to the acting arena.
Mm-hmm. You also work over there with the Rovi Theater Company, and I know you've been in a number of plays. You also getting ready to direct during the Paul Robeson Festival. Yeah. Yes. Is this your first time directing?
No, it's not. I've directed some pieces in college, and I directed some pieces here in L.A. since I've been in L.A. Three pieces. I was with a company called the Road Theater Company, and I directed a couple of pieces for them, and I also directed a piece that was presented in Inglewood called West Memphis Mojo. And so this is such a great honor to be now on the boards for directing at the Roby Theater Company. In fact, I just got back from casting. All day long we were casting people for the plays that are going to be done.
And you casted the two plays that you're doing?
I didn't totally cast them, but at least I filled in all the spots that I couldn't fill. Mm-hmm. And the rest, but it gave me all possibilities of the people that I didn't have as first choice. I had fill-ins for those first choice people.
Mm-hmm. What are the two plays about?
The first play is called Eslanda Unplugged, and it's about Paul Robeson and his wife Eslanda. They call the Essie, and it's a play about both of them. Essie has known for years that Paul Robeson has been dilly-dallying around the female anatomy, and people, you know, he was a big figure, and women loved him, so they were just more or less throwing themselves at him, and he, being a man of stature and an athlete, he had quite a libido, and he exercised it. So this was Essie's chance to get back and state her thoughts about him doing that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So he has to relent because he got kind of snagged.
Mm-hmm. Who is the playwright?
The playwright is Nui, I don't know her last name, Lawson, I'm sorry, that's bad. Mm-hmm. I don't know her last name. Mm-hmm. She wrote this play, and part of it is cast. Josh Shams is going to play Paul Robeson.
Ooh, wow. Ooh, wow. He's Paul Robeson.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, in the Emperor's Last Performance.
That's wow. Right. Mm-hmm. Yes, and he, as soon as he heard about it, he said, yes, sir, right on the money.
Yes.
So.
Okay, then. Thank you, Mr. Robert Clemens. We're going to get another interview with you. We're waiting on to see the great performance that you're going to put on tonight.
That's not a problem.
Okay, thank you, Robert Clemens.
Okay, that's Robert Clemens, one of the directors over at the Paul Robes Theater Festival coming up this weekend. Let's take a break for our community calendar, and then I'm coming back with Willis Boyd and Shante Duncan talking about the Paul Robes Puppet Show.
This is the community calendar for upcoming events. The Paul Robeson Theater, the Robey Theater Company is celebrating 20 years of excellence in Black theater from 1994 to 2014 by presenting the first annual Paul Robeson Theater Festival. On Friday, July the 18th at 6 p.m., the reception and stage play reading, the play will be about Paul Robeson when he was in Berlin. On Saturday, July the 19th from 12 noon to 6 p.m. will be a presentation of one-act plays. The event will be a presentation of 18 original short plays about Paul Robeson that has been developed through the Robey Playwrights Program, performed and directed by alumni from Robey Theater Productions and Workshop. Also included will be one puppet show. 32 actors and 8 directors will bring the plays to the stage. The location of this event is the Los Angeles Theater Center, 514 South Spring Street, Los Angeles, California, 913. And for discount and early purchase of your tickets, please contact or call 866-811-4111 or visit the RobeyTheaterCompany.org or the LATC.org. If you have a community event that you would like announced on our show, send the information to dramastage1@yahoo.com, attention Earlene Anthony, and the call-in number for our show is 800-893-9562. Now, back to our host.
Okay, thank you, Earlene Anthony. Now, I have on the line Willis Boyd and Shante. Mm-hmm. Okay. We'll be talking to Willis Boyd and Shante Duncan in just a minute. Yes. And what I would like to do now, let me play a clip from Paul Robeson that he's talking about his relationship to America.
Say the Africans and the American Negroes have turned out to be an extraordinarily gifted people. The great tragedy is that by not making us full-class citizens as yet in America, they may be losing, I don't know how much yet. And to come back, I would say that unquestionably, I am an American, born there. My father slaved there. Upon the backs of my people was developed the primary wealth of America, the primary wealth. You have to have accumulated wealth to start, you know, to build. Mm-hmm. You did it another way here in Australia. You had to build your accumulated wealth too. Mm-hmm. You just came and took it, you know what I mean? And that's what they did in most of the countries. It's what you West. It's what you Europeans did. You just took it. We got to catch up with you a little bit. That's so in America. So there's a lot of America that belongs to me yet, you understand? Mm-hmm. But just like a Scottish American is proud of being from Scotland, mm-hmm. I'm proud for being African. Now, in our school books, they tried to tell me that all Africans were savages. Till I got to London and found most of the Africans I knew and were going to Oxford and Cambridge and doing very well and learned their culture. And even once, somebody had the temerity, after one had conquered the Chinese people and imposed upon them the opium trade and everything else, to suggest that they were a backward people, just the people who had been civilized so long over the rest of you folks didn't make any sense at all. So somewhere, it was wonderful to find about the colored peoples of the world that they were very advanced. So I would say today that I'm an American who is infinitely prouder to be of African descent. No question about it. No question about it. I'm an Afro-American, and I don't use the word American ever loosely again.
Okay, that's Paul Robeson talking about his relationship to America. And I have Willis Boyd on the line. He's doing the Paul Robeson Puppet Show coming up this weekend. Willis.
Hello.
Hey,
well,
Willis.
Welcome to the Coon Round Report.
Can you hear us?
Thank you, Bellin.
Yeah, can you hear us?
Yeah, we're good.
We're good.
Okay. Now, Willis, what was the biggest of who we have, you and Shantae?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Willis, what was the biggest challenge in doing a puppet show about Paul Robeson?
Well, at first, it's just the stature of the man and trying to be able to portray him and give him, you know, his props as far as representing him.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, that's the biggest challenge that I think that we face.
Mm-hmm. Now, how much did you know about Paul Robeson before you began this project?
Not much at all. I didn't really know anything about him before you introduced him to me.
Yeah, neither one of us did.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Shantae?
Yeah, neither one of us really knew much about him. I don't think people really talk about him at all, really. No. So with as much as he's done, you think people would talk about him a lot more than they do. But, I mean, we're both glad that we're being able to learn about him and get some information on who he is and how much he's done and how educated he is. That's really cool.
Yes, and the fact that he was a musician, an artist, a writer, athlete, you think about it, spoke 5 or 6 languages.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Now,
what I think impressed me is he has a church background.
Yes, his father was a minister. His brother had one of the most important churches up in Harlem during that time. And I always say that he was a Dr. King before Dr. King, because his father's across all racial lines in terms of following Paul Robeson. Now, let me ask you this. What do you think about puppets? Is that a good teaching tool for young people and adults?
I think puppets are, you know, I mean, a lot of people just like puppets, but it's a visual, teaching tool. And I have to agree that is I think it's a wonderful teaching tool.
Mm-hmm. Now, how did you... But first, tell us a little about Positive Light Ministry. What is that?
Well, Positive Light, we started out ministering to the children, just trying to perform and give them an out from their everyday stress on Skid Row. And that's basically why Positive Light started, was to help other organizations or assist other organizations in trying to provide better for the youth, you know, youth on Skid Row at the time. But actually, we're all over the place.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, Shantae, let me ask you this. What was the biggest surprise that you found in putting together the puppet show about Paul Robeson? What's the biggest surprise for you?
I think what you were saying about how educated he was and... you know, a lot of the things he had to break past, but I think Willis was saying did he come from a slave background? Like
his dad was a slave.
Yeah, and hearing how much he's learned and how eloquent he speaks and stuff like that, and he wouldn't think that, but I think he really challenges us to be educated individuals and to learn and how we speak, and I don't know, he's just like a really inspirational individual, and it's amazing how far he's come and what he's able to accomplish. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and now, can you talk a little about you guys is putting together the Paul Robeson Puppet Show for the festival coming up this weekend? Can you talk a little bit about that?
It's telling his life from youth until, you know, he got older, and just his acting career, his football career, and then obstacles that he had to overcome. So There are some songs that he sings as well because he was a singer and had a really strong voice. So Puppet Show just is basically about his life. It's just giving you a little bit of insight, and hopefully people will find it inspirational and it'll cause people to try and look him up and learn more about him.
Yes, and our plan is to take this puppet show around throughout the community and make people aware of Paul Robeson. Now, also, before I let you guys go, can you give us your contact information for Positive Light Ministry?
Yeah, our website's positivelight.org, and you can find us on Facebook. It's facebook.com/wearepositivelight.
Mm-hmm. Look, let me ask you and Willis one more question, because we have a couple of guests in here that deals with Feed the Homeless program. You know, in MacArthur Park, Skid Row, and all like that. And I always, I want to ask you guys, what is the homeless situation like in the Inland Empire up there in Riverside and San Bernardino?
Well, you have, you have poverty everywhere, Melvin. It's not as bad as Skid Row,
mm-hmm.
but you just have people down on their luck. Because of misfortune or just because they don't want to or they want to go against the system.
Mm-hmm.
You're always going to have it, but it's not half as bad as Skid Row down in L.A.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Hey, thank you very much, Willis Boyd and Shantae Duncan.
Thank you, guys. We'll see you soon.
Yeah, taking a little time out of your business schedule.
Hey.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Yeah, Willis Boyd and Shantae Duncan. I want to play one more little short interview of one of the directors from the festival coming up this weekend, Dwayne Perry. And I talked to Dwayne Perry about the possibility of a national theater company in which the United States don't have. We used to have one in the 30s called the Federal Theater Project that had a Yiddish theater, Negro theater, Spanish theater, et cetera. It lasted for about 5 years. Of course, the United States disbanded it because they felt that they had too many communists in it. So this is an interview with Dwayne Perry when I asked him about the possibility of that happening again. Any thoughts on how that could be achieved?
that's a very lofty dream. I would say what would need to happen first before we go nationally is to establish theater companies like the Roby Theater Company and get them on a higher level, to get them to the place where they're the equivalent of a Mark Taper Forum or the equivalent to a Goodman Theater in Chicago, where they have endowments of, tens of millions of dollars, so that we can have equity actors who can make a living wage while they tell these stories that need to be told, so that playwrights can be paid the money they need to live and create. I think it's a lofty and a great idea to have a national black theater. However, that would take government funding and so on and so forth. I think if we start at home, if we start with our own, and especially here in Los Angeles, there are so many people with money who could make a contribution to the Roby Theater Company of $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 every year for the next 10 years. If we had 100 people do that, Roby could do some amazing things. Mm-hmm. Then we could do original pieces like Melvin Ishmael's Johnson's Emperor's Last Performance, and actors can make a living wage. It's very difficult to rehearse for free, relatively, and ask actors to work for free, relatively. Actors are the only people who are asked to work for free, and most people in the theater, the lighting designer, the set designer, the costumer, everybody gets paid. the director, well, not in this particular case, but everyone gets paid. So a national black theater company would be great. But I think they're like, we were talking earlier, you have to crawl before you can walk. I think the crawling would be getting these community-based theaters to get to a higher level so that once that is established, then it's much easier to do the next one.
Okay, that was Dwayne Perry, very excellent director. He just got through directing one of the major productions over at the L.A. Theater Center called Knock Me a Kiss that had a four-week run over there. And he's directing one of the production in the festival. Look, let's take some time. I want to open it up to a community roundtable. The last 4 minutes of the show, we're in for a treat. Because Deborah is going to sing a beautiful song, I Dream of Peace.
Dream of Peace. Uh-huh.
Dream of Peace portion. We're going to do that the last 4 minutes. So we got a little time. And I want to get back into our discussion about the impression of women's, if you want to look at it. Now, do you think that that's a big problem in the United States, too?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, there's, yeah, you know, the thing that's coming out now with all of the rape on college campuses.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Obama taking that up as a really strong cause and certain schools being named. And there's been some schools right in Los Angeles, Occidental College, USC, that have been in the news about how they've handled that sort of thing.
Well, let me,
where it gets poo-pooed, and it's either it's one in three women in the world will experience some sort of violence, whether it's sexual or well, physical violence.
Let me ask you a question. Now, if, okay, we're talking about on campus now. If we have a situation when they're talking about numbers, maybe 10 or something like that, just said that happened during a semester, then is a crisis like that that they're talking about, or is it really out of control?
I didn't really get the distinction in what you're asking.
Is that more serious than just say the women's that we have in Nigeria when they can fall in there and take 100?
Rape is never good. In America, you know, those women are able to go to college, so their situation is better than the Nigerian school children who are just fighting for the right to go to elementary school. I believe they're in elementary school.
Especially in relationship to Los Angeles, I think we discussed this before, and I want to really get an answer to this, because I think female women in the United States have more of an opportunity to empower themselves than we look at a lot of these other countries that's being oppressed. And the thing, and let's take Los Angeles for an example.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when Wendy Gruel was running for mayor, see, and you look at a city like Los Angeles, and the thing that all I thought she was going to win, really. And now, why is it that females, women, will support, continue to support all of these males that bring in all of these female-dominated projects and stuff like that? Why females won't support each other, or am I missing the point?
Well, there's a lot of internalized. I can't speak to the race and whether people were voting based on gender, because sometimes the better candidate just happens to be a man, even if you're a woman. Maybe there's a more progressive man, and there's a more a woman who's not going to represent your interests. But it's like racism. There's a lot of internalized racism. There's a lot of people who have taken on the oppression, you know, African-American people who have taken on the oppression, they repeat it in their own communities. They give out the values that, hey, to be smart, to go to school, you know, that isn't,
well, let me,
you know
let
what
me
I mean? And it's the same thing with women. They can internalize this kind of thing and perpetuate. They can be brothel owners.
Yeah, well, let me ask this question. And then, hey, you guys, you don't have to be just guests. You can chime in too.
They're like, she talks a lot. Let's just get her talking.
It's interesting subject.
What can we do? What do it take to empower more females? What do you think? Your thoughts?
Just going out there and talking to them.
I mean, in all
education.
Their business.
Educating them. And
letting them know that they can make a difference.
Can.
I mean, like what you're doing is really inspiring, just that they can say, I can take from my own experience and I can make the lives of other people better.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I do speak with a lot of women that are afraid of of leaving a relationship mm-hmm. because they don't know what to do, mm-hmm. who to talk to, what resources and stuff like that. I mean, I can't really speak on some situations that I'm handling right now, but that's what it is, empowering them and talking to them and letting them know there is resources out there that they should speak up mm-hmm. just because they're a woman and they feel like the man has already bashed them mm-hmm. and they feel less. I mean, I don't know.
How about you, Tanya? What do you think it takes to empower more female, more women in our society?
The way you raise them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But what?
Mm-hmm. Don't raise them to think that they mm-hmm. have to be so submissive.
Starting at a young mm-hmm. age.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's with the children, yeah.
Yeah.
Get them thinking differently. Mm-hmm.
They can speak up and they're just as strong as the man and they can make their own decisions and not such like the old school way of thinking years ago, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I have this little neighbor. She's 4 years old. She might be listening. Her name's Ivy Jean. And she heard that my guitar player was a man. My EP, and she said, I thought only girls play guitar because her mom plays guitar. And I was like, good for you that you think that, you know, but she's got some feminist values in her that just from the way she's being raised because her mom's a strong, you know, independent person.
I mean, you're right. It does start at home, too, where... Mm-hmm.
Your thoughts, Bobby, in terms of empowering females.
Well, like I have a daughter. She's turned 18 in June, and since the age of 5, I kept it real and 100 with her and kept it raw with her on things, and for her to kind of sit back and analyze all situations that she's in mm-hmm. and don't take anything at face value and let her know there's good and bad in men and women mm-hmm. and just understand, make sure her mind is made up that the situation that she's in, that she wants to do what she wants to do mm-hmm. and not to just jump out there and everything. Mm-hmm. So I told her all this information and stuff. So I told her, when you get out there, you'll be prepared. Because a lot of stuff, she didn't want to hear all that, daddy. Yeah. So I'm saying, I'm letting you know, just because you step out there, because, you know, because a lot of men, I'm a man. A lot of men look at women as a piece of meat. And like a lot of women got to understand their part they play, too. Because mm-hmm. a lot of women say, I can dress how I want to. But if you got somebody, like, you know, there are evil people here in general. I can't believe stuff like that happens. So you got evil people who can pretend to be nice. Mm-hmm. And while you portray yourself to be a certain way, even though you might think you're not, they're coming to get you.
Okay.
Yeah.
So. How about you, Arlene, your thoughts on what it takes to empower?
Wow. Well, I say you really have to come to a point that you have to believe in yourself mm-hmm. and just find out who you really are, because a lot of things we can do, we don't know that we can do them until we try it. And, not be content with the man telling you this is the way it is and you don't question it, you know, mm-hmm. because for going back to the Islamic countries, God forbid, but mm-hmm. how they tell the women how they should dress. Mm-hmm. And I think about how here in America, a lot of men have told women how to dress by the fashion industry or the movies or all of these other things. It's men telling women what they should do and how they should do it.
Okay.
But women have to come to a point to say, I'm my own person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
I love
Look,
it.
Let's go around real quick. And can you give me your, because I want to get around to this live performance when we wind down to 4. And can you give you contact information for LA on Cloud 9?
Okay, we have a website. It's www.lac9.org. There, it will direct you to our Facebook. If you just look us up on Facebook, LA on Cloud 9.
Okay.
Contact number is 323-812-9836.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Deborah, your contact information for,
for the event?
Yeah, the event coming up.
So if you look me up on SoundCloud, it's Deborah Penberthy. It's D-E-B-R-A, and then P-E, N as in Nancy, B as in boy, E-R-T-H-Y on SoundCloud. And my event is this Thursday night at 8 o'clock at Troop Unitarian Church, a wonderful place. And it's $10 suggested donation, but if you don't have much money, please just come out. We'd rather have people there.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'd like to extend a special thanks to Deborah Penberthy, Claudia Perez, Tanya Nicole, Willis Boyd, Shantae Duncan, Bobby Buck, my co-host Earlene Anthony, Thank you for tuning in to the Qumran Report from your host, Melvin Ishmael Johnson. And we're going to go out with a live performance by Deborah Pemberton singing I Dream of Peace.
I found this letter. It was written 20 years ago. Written by a girl. A girl whose face I know. Still I wonder, maybe I'm not as good as I thought. It said things of peace, things of beauty, things of love that elude me. Maybe clear day, branches of snow, a window, a world that I would know. Instead, I found, well, maybe not as good as I thought. I thought I'd find me a better way.